Genesis chapter 39.
I'll have you know I did everything I could to stay away from the five-hour energies. I'm just going to try to trust the Lord this morning. Instead, those things can be dangerous, so be careful of those. You know what? It's great to come to a conference like this and motivate people and try to inspire and encourage people to get involved in ministry and for us to go back and help people to surrender to missions and all the opportunities that are there in the 1040 window. And yet we have another challenge as well that I hope happens this week, because as much as we have people going into the ministry, we have some, maybe as many, I don't know what the statistics would be, who don't stay in the ministry. And I love preaching mindsets. Obviously, I hope we all preach for change, but I love preaching a mindset that isn't just for a particular change at the moment, but it is to help us think foundationally that we can apply across the board, and if we do, can be a help to us. And I want to deal with one of those mindsets that I think will help you to avoid getting out of ministry one day or making some decisions based on some thinking that you allow to find a seed in your heart or in your mind. I want to deal with that from the life of Joseph. I don't know anybody in Scripture that, besides Christ, obviously, that inspires us more because of how many circumstances he went through that he could have whined about or cried about or just gotten discouraged about. And yet it seems time after time after time, he rises to the top of whatever is thrown at him. And in one particular of those instances, it may be a seemingly strange one to use this morning, but he reveals a mindset that he has that I found immensely valuable in my own life and in encouraging people, missionaries and pastors and families to stay involved in ministry. So Genesis chapter 39, if you'll stand with me, we'll read just a couple three verses. And I'm not necessarily dealing with going to deal at length with the specific circumstance here, but I want to deal with the mindset that Joseph has to avoid falling into this temptation, because it applies to temptations across the board. So in verse 7, Genesis chapter 39, and it came to pass after these things that his master's wife cast her eyes upon Joseph, and she said, "Lie with me." But he refused and said unto his master's wife, "Behold, my master wotteth not what is with me in the house, and he hath committed all that he hath to my hand. There is none greater in this house than I, neither hath he kept back anything from me but thee, because thou art his wife. How then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God?" Father, I pray that you would use Joseph's thinking here to help us to think right ourselves. And there's no way that I could know every circumstance to apply this to that every full-time ministry, those involved in full-time ministry here, that they'll face. But I know it'll be applicable. And I know it can help them to stay strong and not let some thinking develop in their mind that could lead them in a direction that would be detrimental to your work and to all that you've used them and cooperating with them to build up over the years. God, I pray that some of that would be avoided through whatever circumstance might already have a seed or could in the coming years. So use this message for your own honor and glory and the work that's done and represented in this room, in Christ's name. Amen. You may be seated. This is considered to be one of the great temptation texts in the Bible, that probably James and some of what is dealt with in there. Oftentimes, in taking this text and dealing with Joseph and coming against this temptation, it becomes a little bit of a strategy. It becomes a strategic that, well, when he's deciding how to resist Potiphar's wife, then sometimes the point is made, and I think it's valid, that, well, he maybe shouldn't have been in the house by himself, or something that he did well, that he fled with a garment. I understand all of that, but there's something wonderful. When I was going through my Bible reading quite a while back, that the Lord used to reveal really what was in Joseph's mind that was the backdrop to him then doing the, you might say, the tactical things or the strategy or the whatever it is that he used to avoid this. And so when we get into verse 7, in order to develop this mindset, then Joseph has been sold into slavery by his brothers. Here he is in Potiphar's house. And he's already risen to the top, and he's been given a lot of authority, a lot of responsibility. And at the end of verse 6, it talks about him being a well-favored, that he was a goodly person and well-favored, and certainly that deals with his character, but the words there indicate that he just had an attractive personality to him or a persona, and Potiphar's wife is drawn to him. You gotta realize she comes to him, and being Potiphar's wife, in some ways she carried some of the authority that Potiphar had, not the same authority, but the fact is Joseph was a slave and therefore he was subject to her, and here she is giving him a direct command, lie with me. And so for him to reject that is certainly a big deal. And so he responds with the words that he does that we're going to come back to here in a moment. But then day after day after day, it's just relentless. He faces this. I mean, it seems like every day that he gets up, she comes at him some other way, and maybe not the same way every day, but would just be the pressure of over and over and over and over, and yet with it being daily and with it being incessant after him, that he finds a way. There's something in Joseph, besides just the strategy that he follows, there's something in there that kept him with the ability to say no today and to say no the next day and to say no the next day and no the next day. I mean, his master's wife. And so it finally comes to the point where she sees him in the house and she takes her opportunity. Instead of waiting for him to answer, she wants to make this whole thing happen and she's going to get him to give in finally. And yet Joseph resists once again and significantly and ends up in prison because of his resisting. And certainly the sovereignty of God. I love that verse 20 says they put him into a prison place where the king's prisoners were bound. And if you're going to be in prison, boy, that was the place to be, because God was simply preparing him even in prison for the next phase. And Joseph just everything that happens to him, he rises to the top. But he says at the end of verse 9, how then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God? What led him to believe that? I mean, here he is in a foreign country. Nobody knows him. He's away from his family. They think he's as good as dead. What leads him to this? Well, he has some reasoning that leads him to believe that this would be terrible. And he doesn't give us three steps. He just reveals to us what he's thinking. And so I want you to notice this. In verse 8, it says, when he refused, but he refused, and here's what he says, and this is in two halves or two parts, not necessarily in halves. Notice what he says in this first part. Behold, my master wotteth not what is with me in the house, and he hath committed all that he hath to my hand. There's none greater in this house than I. I want you to notice how Joseph is emphasizing. He's focusing on everything that he's been given. I mean, he says, my master doesn't even know everything that's under me. He doesn't even know everything that's in his house because he's placed it all under my care. He's just given me like a blanket authority over everything that is here. And he doesn't even think about it anymore because he's placed so much with me. And he hath committed all that he hath to my hand and put it under his authority and said, Joseph, I want you to take care of all of this. And he says, there's none greater in this house than I. And he's not talking about that he's better than everyone else, but the authority and the responsibility that he's been given, he's just conveying to Potiphar's wife. He says, I want you to realize everything that my master has given me. There's a lot that he has put under my care, and there's a lot that he's given me the responsibility for. I imagine Joseph felt like, here I am, a slave. I came here from the very bottom, and I could be in a position where I'm abused and beat every day. But instead, look at what I've been given. God has blessed me with this much. Notice what he says next, though, the other part. Neither hath he kept back anything from me but thee, because thou art his wife. After emphasizing how much he's been given by his master, Then he emphasizes how little he's been denied. He says, I've been given all of this. And in this whole house, there's one thing that he said I can't have. And that's you. And he said, for me to turn my eyes off of everything that my master's given me and begin to focus my attention on the one thing I've been denied, that'd be great wickedness. I'd sin against God. And really, Joseph was able to deal with this temptation according to what he says. What's going on in Joseph's mind is that I'm going to live my life focusing on what I've been given and not on what I've been denied. Because Joseph had concluded that what God had given him was enough. And that he was blessed to have all that God had put under his hand. And he was content with what he had. And he knew to not be content and decide that I really deserve this as well. I really deserve to have even more. And to turn his eyes off of that would not be right against God, would be a sin against God. And then he also trusted that God was going to use his master to know how much he had. And so Joseph comes to this mindset of realizing that I'm going to keep my focus on all that God has given me and all that I have and not on what I've been denied. And I want to propose that some of the thinking that could get off in our minds, and often does, that leads to our area of greatest temptation could come from our area of greatest discontent. When we begin to shift our focus onto what we don't have, or what God has withheld, or what we've been denied, or what He has chosen not to give us just yet. Remember the garden? I mean, God placed Adam and Eve there. And He gave them everything. He created this incredible paradise. And I mean, they could look around and all of it was theirs. And He says much to Adam, just like the master said to Joseph. He says, Adam, I'm placing all of this under your care. I want you to subdue it. I want you to have dominion over all that's here. And you get to name the animals and you get to take care of the garden. And everything here is yours, except I have this one tree. I don't want you to partake of it. Well, here they have all this that their master, that their God has blessed them with. And yet something in their hearts and their minds gets their focus on the one thing that had been denied. Because they begin to shift their focus from all of that and off of that to this one thing, then they make a mistake that all of us have been paying for since. I'm telling you, anytime we stress what we lack over what we have, we're prime targets to make bad decisions. We're prime targets for temptation. They emphasized the one thing they didn't have. And I'd summarize the message this morning in this statement: I will focus on what I've been given, not on what I lack. And that's what I want to challenge you with this morning. I will focus on what I've been given, not on what I lack. It may be that one of the greatest deterrents to temptation, and I'm not talking about just the kind of temptation that Joseph faced here, I'm talking about the kind of temptation that would cause us to make 1,000 other decisions once we get our focus off of what we have and we get our focus on what we lack. Do you realize contentment is extremely important? And one of the reasons that contentment is extremely important is because it lets God be God. It says, I trust Him to know what I should have. And I trust Him to know what I can handle. And I trust Him to know what maybe I cannot handle at the moment. And what He has chosen to deny me is because He knows best. And I'm going to let Him be God so that I don't think, well, wait a minute, I deserve this. I deserve to have more. I deserve to have been given this. I deserve to have achieved this over here in my life. And I don't know why this is not within my reach. I don't know why this has been withheld from me. It says, I'm going to let God be God because He knows what I can handle. He knows what I ought to have and what I ought not have. And it refuses, because of you believing who God is and that you can trust Him with your life, it refuses to elevate what you don't have above what you do have. It says that you trust your master with what He's given you. Well, we live in a culture that creates desire and want. I mean, we really are driven by novelty in so many ways, and more all the time. America now has this throwaway culture that, and there's a reason that things really aren't manufactured to last a long time. Have you ever noticed almost anything you buy anymore, it's basically designed to last a little while and then you throw it away because that's what people want. They want to buy new and they have to have new and novelty. And you know, it's interesting how God designed us. If you've ever studied some of the effects, ever studied addiction, then you understand a little bit about dopamine and the effect that it can have on the brain. And there's something about the brain, and God designed it this way, that whenever it encounters something new or something novel, we get this shot of dopamine in our minds, in our brains, and it's something that it feels great. But then when we get more dopamine and we get more dopamine, then those levels for it to register get higher and higher, and we end up having to have more and end up having to have more and more and more. And one of the problems with the dopamine, getting more spurts of dopamine and more and having to have so many things new all the time and the novelty, is that it raises that threshold, and now things that used to register as exciting, now they're a little bit routine. They're mundane and they're boring. And our culture supports that. I mean, you take, I have an iPhone, and I love the iPhone, and they've been masterful at causing people, man, they get a spurt of dopamine every time a new iPhone comes out, and I'm one of them, man. It's like, let me have that last one doesn't do everything that the next one can do, and I'm gonna have it. And our culture creates that. The commercials and all the advertisements are meant to make us dissatisfied with what we have. Ministry's not exempt from that. We can end up having that same effect in ministry that, boy, we want to do and be everything that we can, but sometimes it comes in a form of, boy, I've got to have more and I've got to have new. And we end up getting our focus on the things that we don't have instead of what we do have. And so many problems can be traced back to getting this focus off. I mean, let's be honest to what the text says, because we ought to be. How much of the problems and the failures in ministry come in part in marriage? Because a husband or a wife forgets what they have and begins to get their focus on what they lack. I married a beautiful, freckle-faced blonde, my high school sweetheart. Been married a little over 30 years now. I'm so thankful that, you know, we've gone through three children and we're both over 50. And it's been a joy ride. I honestly can't think of hardly any arguments in 30 years. That's a phenomenal thing for two human beings, period. You know, living under the same roof. I'm thankful. You know, it would be easy for either one of us, knowing each other as well as we do now. We can finish each other's sentences. You know, we know what each other's going to say and kind of what each other's going to think. And we get to that point and it'd be so easy to lose sight of all that God has given me and begin to focus on what she's not. And she could do the same thing. In fact, she could do it a lot more easily than I could and say, you know, I know everything about you and I see the warts more clearly than ever. And she could begin to focus on what I'm not instead of what I am. A lot of times that drives a lot of detours in marriages and ministry. Because you get married a while, you begin to get your eyes on something else, and before long, she's not everything that God designed her to be in your mind. You decide to focus on what she's not more than what she is. You're not exempt from that. It seems like every week I hear another story in ministry about some of those failures. It's not just in that. That's driving so much of the sexual sins. I don't know, in the States with the access to the internet and everything that comes along, it's so easy to see so many things that we have been denied, or God has not placed within us, or I see that we have met several singles this week, and sometimes they get their focus on the fact that, boy, I've not been given this relationship yet. God's not given me a mate, He's not given me a husband, or not given me a wife yet. And many times there's an impatience, and singles begin to turn from everything that God has given them and the unique opportunities they have, that kind of like Paul said, that, well, I have a chance to really focus more on the ministry right now. And they begin to get their eyes on the things that they don't have and get their eyes off the things that they do have. And they get a little impatient and push some decisions and end up making some of the decisions they so regret in the future, because they begin to be driven by what they lacked over what they had. How much debt comes to people these days because they get their eyes off something they don't have instead of what they do have? Well, it just takes a few seconds to sign on the bottom line and on a note, a loan, pop that credit card out and use it, and yet it takes a long time to get out of that. And so many of those financial decisions are driven because we get our eyes off of what we already have. And we begin to be driven by what we lack. And it begins to be a great temptation. Can I say to you, in the ministry, I'm not proposing that we become content and lackadaisical. I love the inspiration that comes from ministries. And I love the privilege of being able to preach with Brother Chapel and Brother Gibbs, and how God has used them, because they're men that have great vision and great passion. And I want to be inspired by all of that. And so I'm not talking about being driven to do more. We do need that, because that inspires us. And I'm thankful that God has given us in our lifetime some wonderful examples of that. I'm not referring to that part. I'm saying when we become a discontent that we ought to have some more that maybe God hasn't chosen for us to have. And I don't mean don't be driven to do more and more and more, but those things which God has not chosen to give us as yet is what I'm referring to. And we can do that in ministry. And many times we can make decisions in ministry because we have decided, no, I don't have enough that God has given me. I've got to have more, and I've got to make some decisions. And we begin to lose sight of what we have. I don't know how many times it's that I see pastors become a little bit discontent, and they lose focus on all that God's given them in the churches where they pastored. And I mean, it's people that when they were saved, you loved them to death. But now they've been there 5 or 10 or 15 years. And now you begin to see what they're not more than what they are. You lose sight of, well, you're their shepherd. You still have a chance to love them, and you'll make decisions that can cost them and cost you and cost you a wonderful relationship with them, because you get your focus on what they're not over what they are. I wonder how many times a pastor changes churches or changes a field, not necessarily just because God told him, I want to make you even more effective over here, but he fell into this trap. And he lost sight of the benefits of a long-term ministry because he can only focus on what's there for so long, and then he begins to get his eyes on what's not there, and he thinks, well, I will have what I don't have right now, I'll have at the next place. The problem is, you can lay this over every relationship in your life. You can lay it over every place in your life. You go to the next place, I'm telling you, your human nature is still going to have to be fought, and that is not to focus on what you lack over what you have. Many times, even churches can get that way. How often the church members, they came to that church and they loved that pastor and they saw everything that he was and he and his wife and his family, and they loved it and they were drawn to that. And boy, this is wonderful. I'm excited about all that. And yet over time it begins to wear on them and they get their eyes, begin to see the things that he's not as greater than what he is. And that relationship begins to deteriorate over time. You have to be careful with properties and buildings and all of that, that you constantly go back to the Lord and say, Lord, I want to make the decision you want me to make. Don't let me succumb to this mentality that I make decisions just because my focus is on what we don't have. Many times a church was something significant at this point, and yet they get to trying to climb to the next level, then they lose what they were. And a lot of small churches can be that. I think of a men's advance that we have in Stillwater, and I think of some of the things that we have lost over time because, boy, it was so great when it was smaller and we met in a tent. And I remember we'd have just a few hundred men, and it was incredible, and the spirit was great, and the singing. And I'm telling you, then we had to move to the fairgrounds, and it grew up over 1,000 and 1,500 and grows and grows and grows. And sometimes I look back at that and I say, it's almost like we lose a little bit there. We've had to really work to keep from focusing on the things that we lost instead of the things that we have, because there's just something about us that over time gets a little bit bored, and we begin to think, boy, I would get a little bit more excitement, or I'd be able to go a little further if I could just have this and have a little more. And to the extent that God grants it, that's one thing. But be sure that it's something the Master is granting to you instead of getting your focus on what you lack more than what you have. Paul taught us to be content in whatsoever state we're in, abounding or in want. And both of those are difficult sometimes. He taught Timothy that godliness with contentment is great gain. He taught Timothy a lesson that Americans could learn from a lot of you. That is, taught them to be content with food and clothing. And yet we begin to be driven by so much more sometimes. And if we can end in Hebrews chapter 13, then I'll be done. Hebrews chapter 13. Hebrews 13 in verse 5. I will focus on what I've been given, not on what I lack. Hebrews chapter 13 and verse 5. Let your conversation be without covetousness, and be content with such things as ye have. And here's why. For he hath said, I will never leave thee nor forsake thee. Sometimes our conversation gives away a lot, that our desires for more and our being driven to exceed what he's given and excel at even more and more. And sometimes that conversation reveals a covetousness. And he says, be content with such things as you have. And I'm confident he's not saying don't be driven to achieve anything and everything that God has given you. We ought to do that. But until God grants, and we've done everything that we can until God grants, he says, I want you to be content with what you have, because you're not going to lose the one thing that matters the most. I'll always be there. I'll never leave you. I'll never forsake you. And to the extent that you let me be God and you realize what I've given you is what I know that you can handle, and I know what you ought to have. And if you'll be patient, I'll do everything that I need to do and everything that I want you to do if you'll allow me. But don't rush it by beginning to focus on what you lack over what you have. Joseph went on to be one of the most inspiring stories. Inspired us to be significant, to be able to go through some of the most challenging times. Because there was a day that he recognized, my master's given me so much. It was just a little bit that he said, you can't have this ever or right now. And Joseph said, I'm fine with that. Until God grants whatever else he's going to do in my life, I will live with what he's given me, and I'll focus on what I've been given, not on what I lack. Father, thank you for the privilege of knowing that you love us so much. And you've blessed us immensely. I'd have to think, regardless of the incomes of people in this room, this would be a room of people who say, you have given us so much. Now, sometimes I'm embarrassed by how much you've blessed me with, not only materially, but relationally. To have opportunities to leave Oklahoma and come to a place like this and rub shoulders with men and ladies like this and have these opportunities. God, I don't ever want to lose sight of how good you've been to me. And I'm sorry for the times that I get my focus on what I don't have. And what maybe you've withheld for reasons that I don't understand, but you see so clearly. And I pray that you would fine-tune our eyes and our hearts to be grateful stewards of what you've given, and to not become discontent with what in your wisdom you have set aside for us not to touch, not to have, not to enjoy, not always because they're bad things, just because your sovereignty knows that wouldn't be good for us right now. So God, accomplish what you need to, and I pray that every heart would be willing to be honest about what area might be a temptation because they're discontent with what you're doing in their life and something you've withheld, something you've not provided. So would you do your own work in this time, I ask in Christ's name. Amen. Let's stand together. Just have the piano play for just a few moments.